Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk, a show dedicated to exploring all aspects of creating a great dental office, where the only dumb question is the question that's not asked. Here's Jim and Han.
Good evening, Jim Jarvis here, along with my co-host Han Tran. Han, how are you?
I am doing wonderful, Jim. Just wonderful.
Excellent.
Thank you for asking.
Excellent. I'm glad the hurricane issue didn't show its ugly face in your neck of the woods. Obviously, for the folks that were exposed to it, we hope everything turned out well. And we've got a very interesting Straight Talk tonight, episode number 46 on the series. Obviously, remember to go to our website, see if you'd like to download any of the previous episodes, send us an email. But tonight's show is coordination. More coordination and more coordination. So we're going to talk about that very simple word. Most people think, well, that's a simple thing. We're going to talk an hour on coordination. Well, Han, you and I were talking before the show that we'll be lucky to get everything in an hour. How much
that's
is
right.
available in the information that has to be talked about and should be dealt with. But coordination in general is one thing and only one thing only. Flow of information. It's crucial. And if you don't have a complete plan or process in place where your team focuses on that flow of information, a project, especially a dental project, can go off track almost instantly. So tonight we're going to talk about all those important items, those things to look out for, things that you should have in place, processes and or procedures that your team understands how the information needs to flow. If you foster this environment, you will actually set yourself up to have a pretty smoothly run project and definitely well on your way to succeeding. But coordination itself, Han, we were talking about there's just so many forms of coordination. I'm just going to quickly go down through those, and then we'll talk about them in general. And then we're going to get into the nitty and the gritty, the important parts, the things that you got to really make sure are covered. But obviously, there's things like emails. Obviously, everything needs to be in writing. And nowadays, it's emails. I mean, that's just the way it is. Make sure that everybody gets copied or everyone gets connected and forwarded via that email. Things like schedules and timetables. Those are very, very crucial. You need to have those in place for the right kind of flow of that important coordination. Meeting notes and agendas. Obviously, contracts. And things like outlines where team members really know the responsibility. So, Han, talk a little bit in general about the flow of communication and just how information and how important it is to have it in both directions.
I myself, Jim, believe in having more information that you don't need than not enough when you need it. Okay, I like the team, all the team member, to at least have access to the chain of communication or the email chain. If it does not involve them, great. If it does, they can interact, react, and take care of the things that, you know, they need. We don't leave out anyone. I'm talking about the general flow of information pertaining to the project, the technical, the design, the decision, and things like that. naturally in a project, there are, there are important contractual discussions and stuff like that between team members, like the owner and the, and the engineer, the architect, and so on. And those, not everybody need to be involved in that, or should they be involved in that? But the technical aspect of the project, the flow of information usually starts from the owner, the project owner. He or she give the directive, their vision, their objective to the the project team. Captain would be, whether it's the architects or engineer, usually it's the architect. And then from there, it flows to the rest of the team during the design, during the design phase. And then once the project go out to bid and the project's awarded, the contractor will be included. I typically include the entire project team on discussions because I like them to at least be aware that there's activities that that may affect their work that need their attention. So it's the the more information, the more transparent, the more really available of technical and information and decision, the better and more efficient the team will be able to function and address everything and anything that may arise on the project. Jim?
Yep. So step number one in developing or having a complete plan and process is make sure everyone that's part of the team gets a copy of that communication. Like Hans said, even if it's not related to their particular area or expertise, you never know. You never know if there is something that hidden in the weeds, hidden in the background, that they could contribute, that could help to expedite your project or could basically stop a delay in the project because of information they have. I'll give you a real-time example. A particular project we're working on had two different easements that were being worked on that particular project, both with a particular electric company. These were electrical easements. One group had to do with some adjacent property to, adjacent to the actual dental office. The other group had to do, or the other easement had to do with a potential add onto the building. Unfortunately, because of an inadvertent lack of communication, the two groups, one happened to be a lawyer, the other was our architectural firm, did not have the privy of the information. And what happened was that the electrical company confused the two easements and thought that they were one. So by doing that, it caused a pretty substantial delay in the request for the second easement and what was going to be necessary in the way of relocating that. And so you see what we're getting at. If the architects would have been privy to the information that the lawyer was working with and the adjacent properties, he would have been able to circumvent, we would have been able to circumvent that basically mishandling by the electric company and save that time. So, it's not anything that any particular group did wrong or didn't do wrong. It's just that they didn't communicate with the other. And it kind of is, it's in, you know, it's natural to say, well, you know, that's a different easement than this is a different easement. Well, yeah, we know that, but the electric company didn't. They made the mistake of thinking that both easements were the same easement. So, you know, that's a real practical idea of what Han was just saying, where everybody needs to see everything that's part of the design team, because you never know what may be germane to what they're dealing with.
Let me interject this, I'm going to jump. Okay. The reason why I strongly believe that every member of the team need to be involved in the, you know, in the flow of information. And Jim brought up earlier about have everything in writing. Yes. Have everything in writing. Okay. Verbal communication, command, direction, ain't worth anything when you're standing in front, you know, when you're in litigation. People forget. Whether you're being sued or not, it's irrelevant. It's that people forget. And when they forget, those little slip could cost, you know, days, weeks, thousands, 10,000, 100,000. It can be pretty severe. So everything in writing, so that way there is a flow that you can refer back to, so that everybody can, you know, can check and double check. You can't do enough coordination in a construction project or a design project, you know, because there's so many moving parts. Okay, there is. What Jim was talking about is that you have even just two parties involved. One party may only know a limited knowledge of a specific issue. The other party may have history on that property and know the intricate complexity that they can assist in the whole process if they are brought into or included into the conversations or the flow of information. Everybody, you know, we don't assume anything, okay? Not everybody know. There isn't a single individual on the project that knows everything. So together as a team, when they are informed, have access to information, they can hope to, you know, to fill in the void if there is such thing. In case there is such thing, for instance, I think all of us are guilty of this. If you are a specialist in a certain field, let's say a structure, you only see structure. Everything else is almost irrelevant. If you are a mechanical engineer, you look at the mechanical because that's the important stuff. Everything else is almost irrelevant. But everything is relevant. If you work on a 2D plane and you don't realize that the, you know, the ductwork that you place in the building as it distributes throughout the building to deliver the cooling and the heating requirement throughout the building, if it sets too high, it will conflict with the structure if you don't think outside the box, outside of your realm of specialty. So it's important that everybody is in, you know, in the mix, so that we can all work together to make things flow a lot smoother, a lot easier, with a lot less oops, we forgot that. For instance, here it is, really, really simple thing. We have a washer and dryer design in the building, and we put in a dryer vent, you know, a duct. There is electrical, okay, through the coordination process somewhere. Forgot to put in water for the washing machine, okay? The discipline, even though there's every discipline is on board, but those little minor details cost money. So if you are the mechanical engineer and put in the pipe for venting it out, the electrical guy put in the, you know, the outlet for the machine and go, hey, this is a washing machine. Where's the water? They can tell the member of the team, hey, you know, we forgot. You didn't put it in the water. Get that taken care of. That's why coordinations, everybody need to have all the information, even if they're, it doesn't pertain to them at that moment or that instant. Jim?
Right, exactly. Yeah, and I know a lot of our listeners might say, really, guys, you're really making a mountain out of a molehill. Well, actually, we're not, because coordination is so necessary to avoid things like duplication, effectively costing you money, to avoid contradictions and inconsistencies, like Han was just talking about, issues that effectively could cost you money or time, which means money, basically to achieve an accepted degree of completion within the desired time frame. It is crucial to have proper coordination. So step number two, or item number two in the process or the plan, is to make sure there is a standard flow path. Now, what the heck is that? Well, it's real simple. Han and I, we use the analogy of a football team. You got the coach, you got the quarterback, you got the players. Okay. The coach tells the quarterback through his team members or his assistants what the plays are going to be. The quarterback runs with everything. He instructs everybody out there. He's in charge of everything. That information flows in a proper path so that every player out there knows what's going on at any given time. You don't have one player running one play and the rest of the other players running another. Well, it's the same thing in the building industry, especially in construction. The flow of information has to come from the owner to the architect to all the team members. Remember our previous podcast. We are the quarterback. It's crucial. And why we should be the quarterback and not someone else, not the interior designer, not the general contractor, not an owner's rep. No one else is the quarterback. We're best suited to be the quarterback because we can then touch base with every one of the other team members. And that includes some team members that are not hired by us specifically, things like civil engineers, things like all the other folks that are out there, even the contractor themselves do not work for us. They work for you as you as the owner, but you have to instruct every team member. And I mean, instruct them. And the best thing is put it in writing and give it to them, if not in their contract, in an email form of communication, that this will be the flow of information. Everything goes from them, from you, to the architect to the contractor, or subcontractors, or consultants, and vice versa. If it needs to come back, it comes back through that process. So it's forward and back. By doing that, it does one very crucial thing. Okay. The quarterback knows everything that's going on at any given time, so that, as Han just said, if the owner decides, I want to put in a washer and dryer in the basement. Okay, cool. Easy, right? Piece of cake. Well, yeah. If that was in the middle of the design process and everybody's plugging away doing their thing in their own little nutshell and not looking at what everyone else is doing, that's exactly what happens. Somebody forgets to put the water to it, or someone forgets to put the drain to it, or someone needs to check and see if there's enough drain elevation change so that you can actually put a washer and dryer in the basement. Because if your utilities outside are too high, meaning the civil engineer will tell you where they're at, and if they're only 2 or 3 feet below the ground at your building, and your basement is 8 feet deep, all of a sudden, you know, you're five feet below your sewer line. Well, how in the heck are you going to get the water to flow out of the drain into the sewer line when it's 5 feet above? Well, you can do it. It's called a very expensive piece of equipment called an ejection pump. Costly, expensive, nasty, but it can be done. But at the same time, the flow of information going back and forth through that process allows for those things to be caught way before you're out in the field. You do it on paper. And that's a crucial thing. So that's put it in writing. You must put it in writing and enforce it. Do not, please do not allow any team member to circumvent the chain. What do we call it? The chain of command, Han?
Yeah, it's pretty much that. I mean, it's like you have to establish who's responsible for what in the beginning when you start, I think it started. I often, instruct our team, all the consultants, including the bidders, before they're hired to do the job, is that your question will not be responded if you leave it on a text or a phone message, because everything should be, like I say, everything should be in writing so that there's a document, documentation of the particular, communication, specifically what it is. There's a date and all that stuff, because you can lose, I get tons of email every day. I get phone call all the time. So you lose those communication if it's not in writing. Okay, but as the owner, you establish who's responsible for it, whether it's yourself if you want to micromanage the project, or your architect, and so on. So there's a team member that's responsible that all the information flow to, and like Jim say, the architects are the one that's best suited for it. They can coordinate everybody else on the project, inform everybody else that need to be involved in implementing, introducing that new change, okay? And then once everything is pulled together, the contractor already know that it's coming because it's included in that chain of communication, and he can prepare and prepare himself to expedite whatever change is. Let's say if you decided to add something where the material has a long lead time, knowing that it's coming down the pike, the contractor may order that particular material, early on. So that way, when things are done with the design and the change and stuff like that, he has that at the site to go on rather than wait, weeks down the road until the material comes. Yep.
A little factoid here, but professional liability insurance, and we were talking about liability on the last show, but professional liability insurance companies repeatedly report that coordination issues are a major cause of legal claims against design professionals and design projects. So for them to say that it's the major source of issues means it's important, means it's necessary, means it's something that you really need to think about. So let's talk about some practical items. Han and I, we've been doing this for years and years and years, and we've got horror stories and we've got other stories, and it's important to kind of glean from this so that you can make sure that here's examples and real life examples of why things shouldn't flow a different way. We had a project, one particular project, where the owner decided that, be that as it may, 3/4 of the way through the design project, well into design development, and actually almost into working drawings, that they wanted to integrate the work of an interior designer who, okay, that's a problem in its first self because he didn't issue, you know, that information come the beginning of things. But the second part about it is the interior designer felt like he was on an island by himself, had carte blanche to do whatever he darn well pleased, and effectively reported to one person and only one person, and that's the owner, and would communicate directly with the owner on all aspects. Han, how big of a cluster was that?
Should I? I'm going to be nice, okay? I've worked with some wonderful interior designers and some not so wonderful interior designers. The main thing is as the owner of the project, it's your money, okay?
Sure.
And if you're going to introduce, let's say, if it's legal for me to waterboard our clients to get all the information, I would, because the information is so vital. What you keep close to your chest and not share with your team will affect your pocketbook, okay? A interior designer by training is totally different than an architect. Their level of knowledge and technical know-how is, they're not there. They can't really contribute.
It's just a totally different discipline.
Okay. The main thing is if there is going to be an interior designer or a theme designer on that you're going to introduce to the project, let the rest of your team know in advance. So that way the integration of those ideas, of those designers, can be integrated into the project. My very first exposure to an interior designer, when I was a lot younger, the interior designer, actually it's more like an interior decorator, wanted to have a really big expanse of glass in this private residence. And it's going to hang a really, really heavy window treatment on it. And the question was, how are you going to support it? And he had absolutely no idea. It was, I want to do that at the tail end of the project. And there was no structure that was designed into the building to carry the load of the window treatment that he wanted to have. So they may have some brilliant ideas. Those people are very creative. They don't play well with other people. It's my opinion, okay? But the more that you expose your team, the more that those individuals integrate into the team as a team member rather than as a team dictator, it will make the rest of the team can help to facilitate, to accommodate, to put in the element that is there to help support, to execute those unique design elements that you want, that they're thinking about. Interior designers, they could be wonderful if they have the know-how, if they have, if they know how to work well with people. It could be, it's a pleasure. But if they, if they feel that when they come on board, they can park the water and everybody step aside and bow, you're going to have a disaster. We had a disaster. Okay.
Right. In that particular application, several things were broken. One, the owner let it happen. Well, first the owner did it. And then two, the owner let it happen in the sense that let it continue to happen and effectively resulted in, a very long, lengthy redesign process, which cost the owner quite a lot of time and effectively money. So, Han, let's talk about another very, very important coordination and that is the dental equipment supplier. And how the what's the proper focus and flow of information?
I find the equipment supplier, they are an important part of your, you know, of your office. You need equipment. They sell the equipment. They live, they breathe, they talk equipment. So they're important in that aspect, is that whatever they sell you, it got to go into the building, okay? The building components and all that is the technical territorial of that belongs to the engineers and architects. If the equipment requires a certain a certain level of support and things like that, the rest of your team needs to know. The flow of information from the equipment folks, sometimes I find it to be a little bit hard to get to. For whatever reason, it seems to isolate themselves and protect their information rather than share their information. It's usually because they, one is that because it's such a cutthroat, in my opinion, area, that if they get onto the project, they start talking equipment, they give them price, the owner most of the time, as you know, a consumer will shop, and I don't blame you, shop two or three different suppliers to see who can give them the best deal, naturally. But once that decision is made, the owner need to let the rest of the team know who you're dealing with, what equipment, and that you're going to put in, and so on and so on. So that way, those individuals that sell them the equipment can get the documentation from the design team so they can integrate their equipment into the project, and at the same time provide the technical information, the specifications, and all the little intricate requirement that deals with their equipment to the rest of the team. Okay, for instance, you have a pan unit. The pan unit will require it to be, they usually sit on the floor attached to the wall. Most of the equipment people want you to build a tank behind it. We need to know that, okay? We need to know why. All that stuff, the information from the equipment people, once you decide you're gonna buy from such and such individual, introduce them to the team. That way, they know each other. They can directly go to each other and get the information they need. You, the owner, do not need to be the expert in everything, but you're the owner of the team. You're the coach. You put the call the play, put the people in where they need to be, and let them execute the play. Okay. It's an area that I find very cumbersome a lot of time, because they're just insulated. For whatever reason,
actually turns, there's some really horror stories, some disasters that can happen if the right information doesn't get to the right hands, and everything from the design side, which is easier to fix than it is in the construction side. The construction side is, okay, the contractor cut up a bunch of floors and it's in a retail center. He put, an electrical, they put a water, put a couple other things and popped them up into the middle of the floor. Well, guess what? The chair that you're putting in doesn't want that stuff there. It wants to have the electrical at the foot, or it wants to have something else in another location. What are you gonna do? Cut the floor back up again? And then redo everything? Well, what's that do? That's delay and cost your money. That information, those particular templates, the coordination necessary for the pieces, the pan unit you're talking about, Han, is the walls behind it or in front of it or to the side of it have to be, lined with lead? What's the code say? Well, the equipment supplier doesn't deal with that. That's not his world. But it's ours, And
yeah,
you'd be
surprised how hard it is. Let's just talk about the pan unit. Okay. They sell it. They bought it from, they are a distributor from, you know, a manufacturer. And then all that information flow down to the people who actually put it into the building, design around it. And you go, okay, who do I, you know, you call the manufacturer and say, all right, your equipment, the X-ray requirements and you know, the radiation shield and all that stuff. And they go, it's your baby. All right. You go and find the people who can, you know, tell you what that is all about. Well, the next thing is the guy who sells it. You go, okay, who do you, you know, who would be an expert or a knowledgeable individual in this area that deals with this equipment and so on that can assist and guide the you know, the team of the requirement? And he goes, we don't know. I mean, it's you know, just the information, just the digging research of information is a major, it's almost a full-time task. Okay.
Bottom line on this one is make sure you instruct your dental equipment supplier the flow of communication. Okay. Everything goes to the architect, the quarterback. Everything from the architect goes to the owner and vice versa, so that everything is properly coordinated. I mean, it's that simple. If you don't do it, you're asking for questions. Now, I got a real good one here for you, Han, and we're going to talk about it probably a little bit longer than we want to, but shop drawings. First of all, what the heck is shop drawing?
Shop drawing, that's the stuff that you draw when you're standing in the shop, isn't it? I'm just being funny. Right? Shop drawing. Shop drawing is, yes, it has to do, again, it has to do with coordination. It is probably the last opportunity you have to change things, to confirm things. Where does that information come from? The drawing, the set of drawings that the architect and engineer generated so that the contractor can bid on, they specify equipment or the performance of a certain equipment, the performance criteria, and so on and so on. The contractor, when they award the project, they're going to go find the fabricators, manufacturers, supplier, and they all look at everything on the project, whether it's plumbing, mechanical, electrical, finishes, and all that. And before they actually buy anything, fabricate anything, the supplier would generate a document we call shop drawings. And the shop drawing would outline, let's say, cabinetry, for instance. Okay, in the shop drawing, they base it on the design document. Okay, the drawings that they bid from. If it's specified for medium density fiberboard, also known as MDF, or particle board or plywood, that's what the core of their product will be. They identify that. If the door to have a certain hinge, a certain pull, they will identify that. If it has a certain finish, like whether it's going to be plastic laminate or Corian or quartz countertop, they will specify that. So on the shop drawing, they produce the drawing of what the cabinet looked like, the section of the cabinet, the height of the cabinet, and all of that stuff. And then they give it to the contractor. Now, this is an important process so that you, the owner, would know, and you go, like, what's the big deal? You just buy the cabinet, slam it onto the wall, throw the counter on there, you'll be done. Well, the important part is if you pay for, a high-quality product that should last you 20 or 30 or 40 years or more in your forever office, Why would you accept something that are put together only intended for to last you 5 or 10 years? You'd be gypped out of a value that you pay for. So the process of the shop drawing is to make sure that everybody are being as honest as they can, being as transparent as they can, and provide the shop drawing that they generate, that they're going to provide what was specified. They're going to use the material that was specified. If they think about substitution, they will submit that and ask, and you know, and provide documentation that the the substitution of the product is comparable to or greater. If it's less than, then you should get a credit. Okay, if it's greater, and it's a thank you for you. And the when they give it to the contractor is responsible for going through that document, check and make sure that everything's accounted for, everything's correct, and then he seals it. He or she signed it and stamped it with their company's seal, and then submit it to the architect and engineer for their review, approval, and all of that. The architect and engineer will go through the document, make sure everything is good, sign off, and say, no, there's add comment if they need to, and then send it back to the contractor with their approval. Then, only then, will the contractor will purchase or okay the fabrication and make the purchase. Okay, that is an important part of the coordination effort during the construction process. If you do not have an architect on your project, this is where you spent good money for less value, because there's nobody the shop drawing is omitted to your project, you wouldn't have any idea what is being provided, the quality of the products being provided on your project. You just don't, because that check and balance process is not there. So shop drawing, it usually we always spell it out in the bidding document, whether the contractor reads it or not. If they don't, shame on them. If they do, great. But it's a coordination process to protect your investment and to make sure that what have been designed or called out and bid on will be part of your project, part of your building. Jim?
Yeah, and an important thing the shop drawings also create, and they get integrated into the final document package that basically is a record. It's given to you in a book. It should be given to you in a book by the general contractor, and it's basically a listing of everything that's in your building. So 10 years down the road from now, in your forever office, when the electrical motor on that piece of pump goes out, you can look it up. You can find out who made it. You can say, okay, yeah, it's not under warranty, but at least then you have all the documentation and the information so you can quickly and very effectively get a replacement motor, because your contractor is going to be long gone. They may or may not even be in business. So you kind of really need to know what those things are, and that's an actual record of what it is. So these coordination things, these shop drawings are very crucial. Actually, we call them mandatory, because if you don't, you're basically saying, go ahead and do anything you want. Just give me my building. Well, like Hans said, you could effectively be shortchanging yourself and paying a much higher for a higher quality and not receiving that particular quality. Also, if there are things like roofing that have 15 or 20 or 30 year lifespans or warranties on them, you need to know what they are and have that documentation, and it's all part of that shop drawing process. Very, very crucial. If you don't follow the system, you are asking for trouble. Because what happens
is,
is
yeah,
things go in.
Go ahead, Jim.
Things are purchased. Things are manufactured, and they're wrong. And when they go to put them in, oh, crap, this piece of equipment won't fit down in the basement. So we've got to rework everything. Well, okay. Rework everything. Well, what that tells me is, okay, that's more money because we didn't make a mistake. We didn't make it a problem. They ordered something that was effectively wrong. And so, okay, we lost some time, usually a lot of time. And you're going to lose some money because you've got to rework things. So, you know, additional fees, it just snowballs. Like we said before, in the construction business, minutes and hours turn into dollars and thousands and tens of thousands of dollars in just a very short period of time. Hon?
Yeah, please note this. We shared this with you not to scare the heck out of you.
No, and this isn't a bitch session. We're not here to just bitch about things.
Yeah, it's because what Jim just shared with you about, you know, if you don't have the shop drawing process, you can get, you know, pretty much anything. Things happen, okay? Let's say, and this actually happened, the contractor decided, you know, they're going to send us a shop drawing. We got the shop drawing. I have some question, and the contractor doesn't have the answer. But I usually know majority of everybody on the team. So reach out to the fabricator, you know, the shop that's going to do the work, and say, hey, could you explain to me what this is? And he informed me that everything have already been built. Okay, let me rephrase that. The shop drawing, the only time that anything built based on the shop drawing is when the shop drawing had already been approved. If it get built before the architect signs off on that document, on the shop drawing, is because the contractor gave their sub the approval to build it. If they build it, that means they're ready to install it. It has ramification. It forced the team, the owner, to accept something that we have no idea that it was done according to the drawings. So, to the design or to the specification, okay? Usually a construction project has schedule, very tight schedule. When things like that happen, it usually forces you to really reevaluate what's going to happen. If you decide to stand your ground, then the schedule get delayed. And that means you lose money. If you decide to take it, then, you know, accept the product, whatever it is, then the question will be, do you get credit? Do you get extended warranty? What is it that have been designed, fabricated, or what have been fabricated that you are now forced to take because the contractor decided to make an executive decision and step and void the protocol that he contractually obligated to do, because he's on part of the project and that was part of the requirement and decided not to do it. Okay, that stuff happened more than we'd like to see, but it happened. So yeah, shop drawing is your last chance to change your mind, to change the design, to change the material, but all of that is done at the last step, the shop drawing. Jim?
Now, part number three in our procedure or protocol, whatever you want to call it, is meeting minutes. Okay. Make sure that the team understands that there will be meeting minutes. And then those meeting minutes, whenever there's a meeting, whether it's, and a lot of times this happens is out at the job during construction, but sometimes before, but meeting minutes are crucial. And also in that, there should be a line that specifies responsibility. Okay. So if we're at the job, it's determined that this particular window needs to be reworked because of a coordination issue or whatever, responsibility items. Okay. It's going to be the window supplier. It's going to be the building, the framer, for example. It's going to be the electrician. Everyone that's touched by that change, or that they need to understand that, okay, it's their responsibility to do something on that particular task. So it's very crucial that in meeting minutes that you put a responsibility line. Who's responsible for making sure that it all goes together? It could be the general contractor, could be somebody else. And then individual team members are responsible for these things. And that also happens during the design. You know, if there's something that's going on, it could be, okay, a meeting minute, who is responsible to do this? Okay, the interior designer needs to do this. The civil engineer needs to do that. The architect needs to do this. The owner needs to do this. There's times where you will have a task, whatever that task might be, like pick a color or pick a material, or you need to make a selection, that kind of stuff. So meeting minutes are number three on that list. Very crucial. Let's talk about something that, Han, we've been dealing with on a particular project here just lately, as-built drawings. What in the world is that?
When do you get that? When is it done? Who is responsible for it? What's in it? Okay. The documents that we have that the contractor built from is the construction document, construction drawings. There's always changes. There's always something happen in the field that require you to deviate from the design a little bit here or there. Maybe maybe the client want to change a door swing. Change a particular arrangement of desk, checkout counter, things like that. But they're minor. They're more sometimes they're more aesthetic. Sometimes they're functional, but usually not major technical. And sometimes it does. But the as-built drawings are the final document that are provided to the owner, provide to the the municipality if they want it, but mainly the owner should have it because the final adjustment to the actual construction document usually don't take place with the engineers and architect. The final markup of where things is that where things was placed in the field is done by the contractor, and that document is actually the accumulation of changes, revisions, and things that are done in the field to the design document. So if they move a door 2 feet down from where it was originally placed, it's marked on the drawing. So that way, if material would change, all of that is marked up on the drawing. So that way you have a legal document, a historical document that you can follow down the road. If you need to change something, you need to know what it is and stuff like that, you can look it up and it's in your drawing. So as-built drawings are usually done as the project is being built, the final, when the project is done, it becomes a legal document that tells you where everything is. Did I miss anything, Jim?
Nope, you hit it dead on. And the most important thing is make sure, and Han, you said it, but I think it's very important to make sure that your contractor is producing the as-built drawing as things are being done. Do not allow them to basically pull it together at the end of the project from memory. It's just a recipe for, I don't know what I did, so don't show anything. As-built drawings are part of that package that you would receive along with the shop drawings that show you what you actually own and what was done for your money. And you need to have that. A lot of municipalities require it. Some banks require it. But by gum, you need to require it because you need to have that as your information. Because 10 or 15 years down the road, nobody's going to remember who did what, where it was placed, where underground is that sewer line, or where underground is that gas line. Well, we don't know. Well, what's the as-built drawing say? Should tell you exactly where it's at. So that when you go to do something, or you go to do a repair, or you go to do an addition, you know what the heck you got. It's very crucial, very important, and it's a coordination item that most people ignore, forget about, or don't even know about. And you need to have it. You really do need to have it. So, again, make sure your contractor is doing it, putting it together as it's being done, and that way you have the information when everything's all said and done.
I would say think of it like in equates to your patient's chart. Everything's there in the chart, right?
Right.
What tooth you extract, you know, what was done, what kind of treatment. The as-built drawing would be comparable to that, a chart.
Very, Jim? Very. Here's another one for us, Han. Change orders.
Love change order. No, I'm sorry. General contractor loves change order.
Right. We hate them.
Okay. Is there a project where there is no change order? I'm pretty sure there's maybe one or two or three out there somewhere. There's always some changes in the drawing or in the project. Change order is usually a dirty word, because it's usually associated with you spending money, costing you more. Not always, okay? I just happened to be on project where change order have a net positive for the owner. But usually change order have a net negative. You pay money out. It could be a very simple thing, okay? I don't like that carpet. I want this, okay? And that carpet that was specified for your project, maybe a 20-ounce nylon carpet, and the one that you saw on your travel that you like, it could be wool. Okay? They look the same, but the material is different. It maybe had to be shipped in from Peru, maybe Turkey, so the change order is going to cost more. But change order, try to avoid as much as possible. And change order go through a certain documentation. Okay, there is a protocol for all of this stuff. We are very regimental in the work we do because it's difficult enough just to to decide what project you're going to work on and things like that. So everything is documented for the sake that you can follow. You can pick it up next day or next week. The shop drawing, change order, where did it start? If you, the owner, decided to do make some changes, the first thing is, we revise the work. The GC will take the work and give you a price. And then if the price is good and you're okay with it, you approve that and you go forward. Nothing get done until you, the owner, approve, because after all, you're the one who paid for it. But mind you, change order don't only cost you for the work itself, but it depends on how severe that change order is. It may require the involvement of structural engineer, mechanical engineer, electrical, plumbing, and architect. Normally, anything that's involved in the building, we get involved. So you get to pay for all of those people and their time to make sure that the document that the contractor going to work from is current. Okay? The contractor don't do the design. They don't put together drawings. The rest of your team do. They don't build just because they enjoy building. They build because they want to make a living. So we, you know, when you decide to make some revision, substitute something, change something, it will cost. Okay, so the time to change anything is when it's still on paper, before it goes out for bid. Minimize the changes as much as you can. We went through, you know, there's project where those change order are pretty severe. I think the largest change order on a project that I was involved in is an addition to a building about 2,500 square feet. No, I'm sorry, 25,000 square feet addition to a design. So that was the largest change order I was involved in. But for a dentist's office, it could be as simple as change out. I'd rather have all wood doors, okay? We have one where the product of the cladding material was changed. And that was a pretty, you know, pretty nice tab for the contractor. Minimize it as much as you can, okay? Because usually it come out of your pocket that you pay for it. It's not something where you say, I'm going to take, you know, I'm going to change this and give me back some money. That's rare. Jim?
Well, and the important part of the protocol in the coordination is that, again, you must follow the system. Owner to architect, architect to consultants and contractor, and vice versa when it's coming the other way. Because if you don't, if you effectively circumvent that system and, let's say, owner directly to the contractor. So let's say the contractor says, no, I need another $50,000 to do this particular work, so I'm going to ask the owner for a change order. Well, okay, owner, are you exactly 100% clear on why he's asking for $50,000? Is he due that change order? Okay, those are the questions that Han and I answer. You know, we'll look at that and say, no, that's not a legit change order. Or, yes, that is a legit change order, and here's why. Okay. Or our engineers will say that. And then we're going to say also, well, wait a minute. If you're substituting this material for that material, because you did that, you didn't have to do this over here. Well, that over there cost, you know, whatever. Maybe it cost $10,000. Did you get a credit for that $10,000? If you circumvent the process and don't go through the team, specifically us, you effectively risk losing that information, very valuable information that effectively could also be very valuable dollars. Or it's a thing that, okay, the owner got a change order from the contractor who wants to substitute this mechanical equipment. Well, that's great. And we're going to save you $10,000 by doing it, Doc. Well, who wouldn't want to do that, right? Well, wait a minute.
Right.
If you substitute that equipment and all of a sudden our electrical and mechanical engineers look at it and say, wait a minute, that doesn't meet code. You can't do that. So if you do that, then we have to add another piece of equipment over here to give you enough fresh air. Well, all of a sudden, your $10,000 save becomes $15,000 add because you got to spend $25,000 on something else. you know, again, the system, the protocol, go, if you follow the protocol, you solve the issue of not having things coordinated and coordinated properly. Like we said when we started today, there's more to talk about in just an hour, and we've got more to talk about, but we're gonna say, okay, enough's enough. Han, I don't know. What else can we say in a short few minutes to be able to say thank you for listening to us and putting up with us? And go ahead.
Yeah, mainly it's, I guess the bottom line is let your entire team know. Show them in. Whatever it is you want to do, whatever you're thinking about, share with them. Their main objective is to make sure that you are taken care of. Everything that you need, everything that you want, is included, as part of the project without you being taken to the cleaner. There is a lot of good people out there, and all you need is to be introduced to one bad one, and that will stay with you for the rest of your life. Okay, like Jim said, this is a topic that we can talk about all day long because there's a lot of horror stories, and things like that. So we can save for another day, but until then, I appreciate all you tune in and spend time with us. Until next time, have a good evening.
You've been listening to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk with Jim and Han. To contact us and find out more info about upcoming shows, please log on to our website at www.hjtdesign.com. Until next time.